This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. The bill comes and I don't even think about it. If the service was slow or superior, friendly or fumbling, I do my quick and mindless math and I write down a tip of 20%. Sometimes a bad experience might cause me to shave off a buck or two, but I know I'm probably still leaving more than the next guy. And why shouldn't I really? I know that restaurant workers rely on tips to get up to the minimum wage the rest of the world makes. I'm right about that, right? The big question is, am I really doing what tipping was meant for, to reward excellent service? Of course, not everyone has as much comfort with the current system as I do. Here's Larry David from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I'm kind of protesting the additional tip. I don't care for it.
You're protesting? You
know, yes. Let him charge me 20%. Let him charge me 25%. I'd rather be charged a 30% tip included than have to add up 18% to 20% to 25%, whatever.
It's not that much, man. It's 2%.
It's hard to get to 2%.
I don't know. 1%, you just move the decimal place two spots.
You have a system. I don't have a system to get to 2%. You know, don't make me do math at the table.
Indeed. It's also complicated. Do we tip on top of an already included gratuity? Should we include that bottle of wine? How about taxes? If it's a slow night, should we leave our server a little more? You know, a big family meal out might cost a fortune, meaning there's a chance an overworked waiter might get a smaller tip than they deserve. All the rules we've learned, of course, go out the window when we go to another country. Here's another question. Why can't employers pay servers the same minimum wage as other workers and take the customer out of it altogether? Several states, including Connecticut, are pushing back on tipping, trying to increase the minimum wage for tipped workers and bring it closer to the minimum wage for everyone else. Not everyone's happy about that. How about you? Do you work in a job that depends on tips? Do you have trouble figuring out when to tip and how much to leave like Larry David? You can comment on our website, WNPR.org, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Joining us to talk about this subject today is Colleen Shaddix. She's a writer who brought this to our attention, and we're glad to have her back on the show. Colleen, thanks so much for coming, and I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us is Chris Prosperi. He's chef, co-owner of Metro Beast in Simsbury. He is also, of course, a regularly featured on Faith Middleton's Food Schmooze. And Chris, you brought us breakfast today. Do you expect
always
a tip?
Bring breakfast.
Yeah,
I have a gratuity cup.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. And we'll talk about his breakfast in just a little bit. But first, I want to get to Peter Terciak, who's a Democratic state representative. He represents New Britain, and he's also co-chair of the Labor and Public Employees Committee. And we wanted to have you in first because I know, Peter, that there is a bill being considered this legislative session, which I believe did not make it out of your committee, that would actually do just the thing that we were talking about, that would change the way we pay tip workers. What exactly would that bill do?
Exactly what you said. It would change the way we pay tip workers by requiring at least the true minimum wage to be paid. I was pleased to hear you say that. Most people, when they go in and get their bill, they assume that they're tipping on top of the minimum wage. The truth is they're tipping to help that server reach the minimum wage. That was what the intent of the bill. It also would have made it clear that the tips belong solely to the person who earned them. Sometimes some managers will try and divide it up, even including a portion for themselves.
Okay, so this is something that maybe people have been talking about the Capitol for some time. It didn't make it out of committee. Why aren't people excited about doing this? It seems to make perfect sense. We're raising the minimum wage for all workers in Connecticut, eventually ending up at $10.10 an hour. Why not just head there with all workers?
Good question, and yet this is something that we've been having trouble with for a long time. Before 2001, the tip wage, taking into account the credit to be less than the minimum wage, was 77% of the minimum wage. Year after year, when we would raise the minimum wage, too often there was an exception made to hold the tip workers' dollar amount steady. So 77% before 2001 is now 63.2%, I believe, and done mainly when the minimum wage went up, changing that ratio so that the dollar amount stayed the same before 2001.
Since before 2001, and just tell us the numbers, too, just so people understand. If the minimum wage is $8, what does a tipped worker make in their actual wage, Peter?
Right now, with the present minimum wage, a tip worker is guaranteed only $5.78 an hour in the paycheck part of their pay. And depending on where you work and what kind of a restaurant you work, this can make a huge difference.
And of course, this is handled, Colleen, differently everywhere across the country. Connecticut has one law. Some states have actually gone to the system that was being proposed in this bill. Why is it all over the place like this?
Well, you're talking about workers who, by and large, are not unionized. And even where you have some kind of floor where the employer has to make up to minimum wage if your tips don't cover it, doesn't always happen. They're just not protected. The Aspen Institute did a study that found that 40% of tip workers make minimum wage or less. So the system's just incredibly flawed.
The system's incredibly flawed, and it's something that we're going to be talking about that you've written about. I mean, the biggest flaws in the system to you, Colleen, are what? I mean, what's the biggest reason we need to get rid of the system that allows workers or actually forces workers to rely on tips for a living?
Because it makes workers vulnerable, both economically and in terms of harassment. The majority of tip workers are women. There have been studies that show that there's huge harassment in the restaurant industry. My mom was a waitress. I waitressed through school. I can attest that that is true.
Okay, Chris, so as a business owner, there's a lot to get to there. First of all, a bill like this, I mean, what would it change about the industry that you're in if indeed we just did away with tipping altogether? We just paid everyone the same wage.
Yeah. See, I'm starting to look at this now, and this is really two different things, isn't it? On one side, it's what the minimum wage is, and on the other side is how does the customer give the tip? So do we go to a European model where the tip is already rolled into the price? So, I mean, you're still – so in Europe, you're still tipping, right? It's actually rolled into that price. So, yeah, the waiters make a higher wage, but that comes from the fact that that money is rolled into the price, okay? So the way I look at it is – on the minimum wage side, like in my place, I don't think it makes that much of a difference. On an average, a shift is about 5 hours. So when we're talking about the minimum wage versus the tip credit, you're talking about pennies. And in a place like mine, in white tablecloth restaurants, it's never an issue because on a good night, they could make upwards of $300.
And you're already paying your servers more than a server would be paid at the very, very minimum, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you tell us about that? I mean,
so,
how much you pay workers?
For us, it really doesn't make that big of a difference because we're already paying the minimum wage. So it's not – in there, it's not – that's not where it is for us. I think for us, even if we didn't, I still try to do the math on what my average server who's working 30 hours, right? Mm-hmm. So what are we talking about? $2 difference in the minimum wage, $3 difference in the minimum wage times, the 30 hours – is it that much in their world? Probably not, because they wouldn't want to get rid of the tips. And I did a lot of reading last night of restaurants that thought about changing it, and it didn't come down to whether they wanted it or not or the customer wanted it or not. Everything I read last night was the servers didn't want it. So in restaurants, on the high end, on the white tablecloth restaurants, where owners came in and said, we'd like to do this, what is the staff thing? The staff was opposed to it.
The staff is opposed to changing the system. But again, Colleen, a lot of what you're talking about is if you don't work at a high-end restaurant and you're sort of scraping to get by, I mean, how is this entire equation different?
Oh, it's incredibly different. My mom would come home with $25 in her pocket at the end of a very long day. There's more side work to do generally because there's less support staff. You're not the whole time you're working, you're not making tips. You're also tipping back. You're tipping the busboy, because if you don't, your tables don't get cleared and you can't turn them over. So it is, there are a lot of tipped workers are 2 to 3 times more likely to live in poverty than non-tipped workers.
But if you change a system where you essentially say we're going to raise the minimum wage for tipped workers all the way up to just the minimum wage, does it in essence do away with the custom of tipping that may indeed then put some extra dollars in your mom's pocket or anybody else's pocket? You know what I'm saying? If people know that they're making the minimum wage, maybe I'm not going to leave so much. That really is money that can help raise a very low-paying job into something where you can make a little bit better living.
Well, that's not actually what I want. Yeah. I think raising the minimum wage would be a good interim step. But what I want is no more tipping. And overwhelmingly, I think that's what consumers want. I wrote this piece for the Washington Post, and it like blew up the internet. Because people have all this discomfort about, well, what's appropriate? Is it 15? Is it 20? Is it 25? What if it's a buffet? What if the owner waits on me? What about takeout? It's all, we don't live in a Jane Austen novel where rules are really set in stone, and it makes people uncomfortable. So why not pay the true price of whatever you're buying and rely on the owner to compensate employees fairly.
Chris?
Yeah, but there lies the question, right? So I'm not Chris the restaurant owner. Now I'm Chris the customer, right? So I go into my favorite restaurant, and let's say it's a mid-tier and my average entree is like $15, right? So that's with the state minimum wage the way it is with the tip credit. So now let's say we're going to take that away, and now we're going to roll the tip into the price. Mm-hmm. So that $15 now has to represent, let's just use 18%, right? So that has to represent that 18% increase. Now, how do I feel as a customer? And I guess that's where I really want to know from people, like, what do people think? Like, when you know it's $15, so you're in control of the tip if you get good service, bad service, or, you know, you can make that call. If it's already in there, does the server have the initiative to do really good service for you?
But let's stop there quickly because I think that you're raising a really important point, but does tipping really have anything to do with good service? And that's one of the key questions about this entire thing. I mean, when you leave money at the end of a meal, it's essentially saying, well, you did a good job, but it doesn't, from a behavioral economic standpoint, doesn't have anything to do with whether or not that person is going to do a good job for you again the next time.
Well, and I would also say, why servers? Right? When you get your carburetor replaced, you agree with your mechanic on what a fair price is, and you trust him to have the integrity to do a good job. Why does every minute transaction need to be incentivized with people who are basically on the lower rung of the economy?
Yes. Service industry, yeah. Right? So yeah. Medical profession?
Yeah. Well, right.
Right? Well, yeah. Do you tip the nurse? And yeah. Peter, before I let you go, I'd like to hear from you. Yeah.
I'm also aware that we're talking about this right now is if we're going to be the first people to be making up the system. There are 7 states in America that require the minimum wage. Every single one of them, economists predict, will do better in the next year than Connecticut. Point to me in the other countries in the world that have the same tipping system we do, and how does it work there? We'll wait a long time. You won't point to a single other country. If everybody else in the world manages to survive, their economies do not fall apart. I bet America's that good, too, and we can do it, too.
Peter Tursiak is a Democrat. He represents New Britain, and he's co-chair of the Labor and Public Employees Committee. Thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it. And we'll be talking again about this, I'm sure.
Thank you very much.
What do you think if you have worked in the service industry or you do currently? We want to hear from you on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. We'll take some more of your phone calls right after this break, Where We Live. This is Where We Live.
George, don't make me get tough with you.
Why, you think you can beat me up?
You wouldn't want me to mess up that beautiful face of yours.
That.
You don't want bacon. I'll surprise you.
Wow, is she not terrific?
She does have a way.
You think she thinks I have a beautiful face, or is she just saying that?
Well, they do work on tips.
This is gross. Yeah, Jerry Seinfeld, George Costanza in the diner, as always. We're talking about tips today in the program. We were just talking with a state lawmaker who's trying to change the law so that maybe we don't rely on tips so much to pay our workers. But what do you think about the entire custom of tipping? Is it just an outdated, Americanized ideal? Let's go to the phones quickly because we've got a lot of people who want to join us. Kelsey's in Farmington. Hi, Kelsey.
Hi. So I just wanted to bring up a slightly different case of tip payment. I once worked as a pizza delivery man, and the way it worked was my compensation included gas or what they, you know, assumed would include gas, but it still didn't reach minimum wage.
Sure.
So in pizza delivery, the tips are even harder to get because, you know, if the pizza's late or if it's the wrong pizza, it really has nothing to do with the person who delivered it and more to do with those inside the restaurant working that way.
Well, Kelsey, I have to ask you before I let you go, what do you consider a good tip, like a decent tip? You deliver a large pepperoni pizza to someone that maybe costs $11, $12. What do you expect them to give you as a tip?
I would say that, at least $5 per trip just to pay for the gas.
Interesting. So, and Kelsey, thank you very much for the phone call. I just want to get to Sarah in New Haven very quickly. Yeah. So I understand you work in this industry, huh?
I do.
So what's on your mind?
I think that for someone who does not yet have a college education, perhaps is working towards one, there are very, very, very few opportunities to sort of get to make a really good hunk of money in one night. And, waitressing has gotten me through school, and I think if they changed it to just a minimum wage job, it might change who was taking that job, and it would certainly change the opportunities for someone without a college degree to be able to sort of get some money together at night to make that education work for them.
Mm. Well, I appreciate your thought, and this is something that I'm sure, Colleen, we're going to hear from some people too. I mean, as long as the money actually is good, it's one thing, but some people, as Chris was saying and Sarah says, you know, they rely on making a whole lot of money in one night, and a whole lot of money usually comes from tips.
Right, but I'm certainly not saying it should be minimum wage. What I'm saying is that what would have been a reasonable tip should be figured into the price of the food the way it is in Europe, so that waiters and waitresses are not making minimum wage. They're doing pretty well.
Yeah, and do you think in your industry, Chris, I mean, do you think that this money would actually go then to the servers? Would it actually make its way into the hands of the people who are doing that work, or would it somehow find its way somewhere else?
It gets a little complicated then, right? And then, like the lawmakers, how do they regulate it, right? Do they say – because right now it's in the law where if I leave a tip on my table, right, there's an expectation that tip goes directly to the person who served me. Right. Mm-hmm. And then they have the right to divide it up if they have bus people or right. That's how it works. Right. I'm not, as the owner of the restaurant, I'm not allowed to touch their tips. Right. It goes to them. Now, if you put that as a service charge, like there's a restaurant in New York. He was the first one to do it per se. Now, he did it because he wanted to even the playing field between the kitchen and the dining room, because it's a very high end restaurant. The waiters were making, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars, and the kitchen staff weren't. So he took control of the tip by doing a service charge, and he divides that between the two places, right? So the kitchen and the dining room get an equal share. So I don't know if you just wipe it out. I guess it would have to be written somehow that money still goes to the server.
I want to get to a lot more thoughts here, but I also want to get to our next guest, Daniel Post-Senning, his author and spokesperson for the Emily Post Institute. He's co-host with Lizzie Post of the Awesome Etiquette podcast, and etiquette is a big piece of this. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you. This is a great discussion.
Well, so you've been listening to the conversation. What are some things that strike you from an etiquette standpoint that you want to chime in on?
Well, I'm just sitting here so happy that you're talking about the wage discrepancy, because it's a really important part of the system that I don't think a lot of people fully understand that servers aren't protected by the same minimum wage laws that even other employees in the service industry are. It's a really important point for people to understand, because it's part of the reason that anyone who's going to eat out, sit down at a table, understands that they're going to be expected to pay a 15% to 20% tip, and that can feel like a lot. But I think you're doing really good work talking about why that is the way it is, and how it might look different in the future.
Well, and as we talk about some of the policy pieces of this, we don't want to get too far away from one of the important things that Colleen raised. It's just that it causes, Daniel, an awful lot of consumer confusion. How much do you tip and when? What's the appropriate thing for the appropriate time? If I have a bad experience, should I take it out on the poor server and leave a small tip? From an etiquette standpoint, what do you say to some of these big questions?
This is a question that we get asked at the Emily Post Institute all the time. We were sitting around at our Monday morning staff meeting talking about this question just yesterday. And the answer is it's ironclad. You tip 15% to 20% if you sit down and you get service at a table at a restaurant. And that's just part of the social contract. When you go out and eat in an establishment, you should be thinking about paying that as part of the bill. If the service is so bad that you really wouldn't feel comfortable tipping 15%, that's where I tell people you're going to want to be talking to a manager or a maitre d' or an owner or proprietor, because that means there's something bigger going on. That means that the service has been below a standard where you feel comfortable paying probably at all. And they're probably going to want to address that or at least talk to you about it.
You know, we got a tweet from Gideon Strumpet who says, whether the tip is rolled in or not, I'm not going back if the service is bad. That's the incentive for good service, not tips. What do you say to that, Daniel?
I think that's a big part of it. And I also want to remind people that even if we set the basic wage for a server at a minimum wage or even higher than a minimum wage at these nicer white linen restaurants that you're talking about, that doesn't mean the end of tipping as we know it. All over the world, where particularly Europe, where servers are protected and are paid those same minimum wages, there is still a tradition of tipping, but it's just much more at the discretion of the diner. And it's not that you can't still be rewarded for good service, and it's not still that you can't withhold a tip if service isn't excellent. under that kind of a system.
If you want to join us, you can tweet us at Where We Live. Joe's in Enfield. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how do you do?
Good, good. We were just talking about Europe. You have tried tipping in Europe, and what's your experience been?
I am coming from America, going over there. It was just a reflex action to lay down a tip, and the server actually said, thank you, but we get paid. This is our profession, and almost to the point where they seemed offended by the fact that, you know, I felt I had to tip them.
It's so interesting, Joe, and I'm so glad you raised this. And I know, Colleen, this is something, in doing a lot of reading about this, there are different customs everywhere. And unless you really read up on what the customs are, you wouldn't have any ideas in America what to do in one place to the other.
Right. I think that's part of the discomfort that people have. They have no idea what's reasonable and what's expected of them.
And it's part of this social thing, Chris, too. There's a lot of places you're expecting. In France, I mean, people are professionals. They don't want to be treated like someone who doesn't know what they're doing. That's how they see it, at least.
So how about throw this question out?
Yeah.
How do we – what is the better system then? Do we roll it into the price, like I said earlier, where the $15 entree is now $18 and it's already in there? Do we add it right to the check when you get it, so it's already in there and you can see what it is? Or do we leave it and let it be to the discretion of the customer? I mean, I guess those are the three models that, right, we could move to. Well, we have one, but the other two we could move to. What is the better system?
Yeah, I mean, the model I like, Colleen, I'll just say, is if at the end of a meal we kept the prices normal, but we left at the end of the meal, this is the service charge. It's 20% across the board. You get charged this at the end of a meal. Then I would see that, and I would be able to choose then to leave a little something extra for what I thought was extraordinary service, something that went over and above.
Yeah, I to tell you the truth, I don't care if it's rolled into the entree price or if it comes out at the end. What I do care about is compensation not being whimsical. Mm. Which is what is the case with tipping.
Well, and speaking of whimsical, I mean, one of the statistics we talked about is how, you know, sometimes how nice a day it is, Daniel, actually has a lot more to do with what people tip than how good the service is. And this is really true. Whimsy is a huge part of it. You know, a waiter or waitress flashes you a smile and they do a horrible job and all of a sudden you're tipping much more, or you're having a bad day, you tip much less. Daniel, it doesn't seem like that makes a lot of sense, does it?
What you're saying doesn't make a lot of sense. And I like to remind people that there can be all kinds of factors that can affect service. A restaurant could be overbooked. The server at the next section could have not shown up. And all of a sudden, the person who you're dealing with is actually doing twice the work. They're doing it at twice the speed, but your meal comes out a little bit slower. And all of a sudden, their pay is being docked because of it.
Which is amazing, Chris.
But how many times, and I do this too when I eat out, how many times do you tip even more, even if the service wasn't 100% what you expected, but the person you really liked, they were really nice to you, they made you laugh. So maybe they didn't, you know, maybe you had to ask for your fork after they cleared it, you know, because there was no fork on the table for the entree. But they were such a nice person. I find I tip more to friendly, nice people than I do if it's just great service.
And I think it gets at a part of this, Colleen, too, is why do we eat out at restaurants in the first place? I mean, a large part of why we eat out at restaurants is because we need food, but a really big part for a lot of Americans is they want to enjoy it. Whether or not it's a sandwich at a coffee shop or whether or not it's a big night out on a date, you want to be entertained. You want to enjoy yourself. Mm-hmm. And part of that entire experience is having the wait staff put on a little show for you, and then you give them something that's commensurate. I understand, as you say these words out loud, how degrading that is.
Yeah.
But it's true to how a lot of people experience a night out at a restaurant.
Well, I mean, it was true. I bent over backwards to be courteous. I found all my customers' jokes very funny. I recognize that as part of my job. And, I mean, that's fine. You are coming out to be catered to. But there's a tremendous amount of harassment that women servers have to put up with. And that goes along with tipping, too. You feel that you can't just say, hey, leave me alone, I'm trying to work here.
That's right. And there's examples, including in your piece in the Washington Post and many others, of people being discriminated against, not getting any sort of a tip because they're just not being as nice as some male customer usually might want them to be. A lot of people want to join us. Joyce is in Southington. Hi, Joyce.
Good morning. Good morning. Great topic.
Thank you.
I tip the fella who brings my stove, because if he doesn't ram bang it, he gets a little $5 tip because he brought it up. He was careful. He was polite. I don't have to tip him. Yeah. I tip the mechanic.
Well, and that's one of the things, and Joyce, thank you for those suggestions, because we haven't gotten beyond really food service, which is really what we're talking about here. Do a lot of people, Chris, come back and want to tip the chef?
We've had that, sure.
Yeah.
And everybody. I mean, there's who – so I guess that's the question. In the law, it's the servers that have the tip exempt, but there are other people you tip, the guy that parks your car, the girl that parks your car, right, at a garage, you right? That's expected. How about your hotel room, right? The person who makes up your room, you're supposed to leave a tip in your hotel room, right? I mean, I guess that goes to the etiquette question. Where are the tips supposed to be?
Right.
Is it written down somewhere? Because sometimes I even get confused.
We just went on vacation and there was valet service. So every time we went out in the car, it cost us $20 because, you know, I tipped them when I left and I came back. And I felt that I had to do that because I was guessing these guys weren't making a lot of money. But I would have rather that was just in the price of the hotel. I would have rather known that. Like I always feel nickeled and dimed.
And that's part of it. So Daniel, I mean, do you have a handy dandy list for us of like when to tip, when not to tip, what to do?
And how much.
And how much.
I absolutely do. Anyone's welcome to visit emilypost.com. We have a tipping guide there that answers a lot of the questions you were just asking. One of the things I like to remind people, there were a couple questions that came up. One is, well, why are we tipping? And I like to return to the root word. It's a gratuity. It's about gratitude. Ultimately, a tip is about showing appreciation to someone for a job well done. In the best possible world, you're acknowledging really excellent service in a way that continues to facilitate that service happening, that lets everybody feel good about it. And I like to tell oftentimes younger audiences, but all audiences, that paying attention to different norms for tipping will really open doors to service all over the world, wherever you are. Definitely for me, it was a real treat when I started traveling for Emily Post. And I started to feel comfortable accessing some of these worlds of service. The first time I stepped out of a cab and had someone holding my coat for me as I got out in the rain, but I felt comfortable rewarding that service so that I was participating well in that whole system, was really a treat and a pleasure. So I like to approach the tip as an opportunity, not as an obligation, as an opportunity to express gratitude, and that can oftentimes make it easier to engage that particular system. And the question of whether or not we tip to bring a standard up to a minimum wage or not, I think it's important to be aware of that, but that's not the heart or the intent of the tip initially. It's one of the reasons I again, really appreciate the discussion you were having at the start of the show, because the more coherence we can bring to that whole system, I think the better off everyone's going to be.
Here's one thing that I'm sure you've seen this, Daniel, but I think it's a big question for our society as a whole. The way in which we just move money around has changed so drastically. I mean, I remember going out with my dad to a baseball game, and we get a sandwich before, and he had this big wad of $1 bills in his pocket, and he'd make sure that everybody who helped us along the way, the guy who wiped the seat down, who showed us to our seat at the ball game, and the guy who gave us the hot dog, everyone got a little dollar tip. But you know, a lot of us don't carry, you know, money around anymore, right? We carry around a credit card. So when, I don't know, and Chris wants to jump in. Daniel, when somebody holds the door open for me, I might not have a dollar in my wallet or five.
I went to New York this weekend, right? Yeah. So I went to New York, and so there's when you go away, you do things, right? Pack a bag, do all this stuff. One of the things I do when I go away, and I'm going away, is I make sure I leave the house or make sure in the couple days before I go to the bank and get singles and fives.
Bravo.
And have those in my pocket for these times, because there's nothing worse than having to tip the guy, because I was in New York. I tipped the car guy before, like when he takes my car. I find that very important.
Yeah.
More important than tipping it when he gives it back to me. But you want to make sure that's in your pocket, because in a society like now, I don't usually carry cash on me at all unless I'm going somewhere where I know I need it. So it's in that planning of going out, keeping cash around.
I mean, Daniel, I mean, how has this changed the whole world? We don't carry around cash the way we used to.
You know, it has, but these are cyclical questions. Etiquette changes and evolves, and every generation witnesses the changes that occur in manners and our expectations of each other over the course of a lifetime. And I would bring our attention back around. I think a contemporary equivalent is the counter tip jar, where it's not necessarily a social obligation. You're not expected to put money in. At the same time, it's so appreciated. The barista working behind the counter, or the person who's bringing you your food, as is often happening now with more and more service happening at the counter. People wonder what to do in that space, and oftentimes now there's that little screen that gets flipped around that has suggested tip amounts that are sometimes a little high for people. People feel uncomfortable hitting no on them, but it oftentimes provides an opportunity to give a tip when you're not carrying cash. If you feel comfortable, you're welcome to do that. You can always enter whatever amount you're okay with. You're also not expected to tip at the counter if you're not planning on it. You don't have to. And that's something else I wanted to say as we were talking about the traveling and that last $20. Tipping should be within your budget. You should budget for it when you're thinking about going out to eat a meal out. Also, when you travel, I love that you mentioned the housekeeping staff at a hotel. They're often forgotten, but leaving a dollar or two per night for the housekeeping staff is a really good idea. It's highly recommended. But that should be part of the budgeting for the trip, and you shouldn't find yourself in a situation where you're just handing out so much cash that you're really exceeding what's reasonable for you to spend.
And it also starts to impact the quality of your experience. I'll just say quickly, Daniel, as we head to break, that the tip jar at the counter for counter service, it brings up this entirely other Seinfeldian experience, which is that you don't really get credit for the tip unless the person sees you put the tip in the jar. But that's an entirely different etiquette question. We're talking with Daniel Postsetting, author and spokesperson for the Emily Post Institute. He's co-host of the Awesome Etiquette podcast. We're also talking today with Chris Prosperi from Metro Beast in Simsbury, and also, of course, Faith Middleton's Food Schmooze, and Colleen Chaddix, the writer who got us thinking about this. She wrote a piece in the Washington Post, "This Is Where We Live." This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up tomorrow, it's our weekly news roundtable, The Wheelhouse. We will be discussing the week's news. Today on the program, we're talking about tipping. Is tipping good for servers? Would they be better off if we scrapped it in favor of just a higher wage? We're also talking about the etiquette of tipping with Daniel Postsetting, who's a co-host of the Awesome Etiquette podcast and an author and spokesperson for the Emily Post Institute. Our friend Chris Prosperi, who is co-owner and chef of Metro Beast in Simsbury and, of course, a regular contributor each Wednesday to Faith Middleton's Food Schmooze. And Colleen Chaddix, the writer who wrote a piece on tipping for the Washington Post that got us and a lot of people talking about it. Let's go to some phone callers. Pam is in Connecticut as well. Pam, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I wanted to, we're talking a lot about restaurant and, you know, waitresses. And I'm actually a dealer at one of our local casinos here in Connecticut. And I rely solely on tips, to make my living. Almost 19 years ago, in 1996, we started at $4 an hour as a dealer. And currently, almost 19 years later, I'm barely over $8 an hour. And I think a lot of times it's very underrated where you don't get a tip at all for giving very good service. And I just wanted to shed a little light on dealers as well. Like there's other positions that.
Well, sure. And Pam, I asked the guy who talked about delivering pizzas this question. I mean, what do you consider a good tip? I mean, do you expect everyone to tip you? And what do you consider something that's reasonable?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I think a lot of it depends. Like if you win, I mean, I have many people who lose. Like a lot of money, and they come to have fun. And if I have given them that good service, and you know we've created this rapport, and they have tipped after not even winning anything. But there's people who have won a lot of money, and you have given that good service, and they walk away and they give nothing.
Well, it's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing, Pam. Well, thank you very much for sharing that story. And as we talk more about casinos coming into Connecticut, it's probably a world that we should know more about. Kennard actually tweets at us, let's keep tipping in perspective. More than 39,000 tipped workers in Connecticut, 66% women. Most work in casual dining, places like Denny's and not Metro Beast. And we've said this, Chris. I mean, this really is who we're talking about. We're talking about people who are not working at restaurants like yours. It's a very different profession when you're working at a diner.
Yeah, but I keep thinking back to what we're talking about on that end, because like I said, it's two different questions here, but on the minimum wage, and does it bring you that much further up? I mean, you still, as a server, you still, even if, let's say we do it today, and now minimum wage is minimum wage for everybody, is the fact that a waiter, especially even in smaller places, it's not, you don't get the hours, right? So is the minimum wage as important as the tip?
Yeah.
That's my question.
Yeah, well,
right?
It's not as important as the tip, but it's still important. You know, you're talking maybe $60 a week. If you're not making a lot of money, $60 a week, that fills up your gas. That's, you know, the less money you make, the more an incremental change matters.
And that's also why, and you raised this in your piece, but it's also why the idea of going out for a less expensive meal and leaving a dollar or two as a tip, it actually does really mean something. You may think that that's just pocket change, but actually that adds up over the course of time for the people who are relying on this money.
It does. And in this economy, you know, I think many people have a restaurant experience that dates to college and, I worked for tips. You know, in this economy, more and more people are doing that to pay the rent. So it does matter. It's not allowing somebody to go to the movies on Friday night.
Let's go through a few phone calls. John is on a cell phone. Hey, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's up?
I think that there's a lot of topics all being pulled together here. I think everyone would agree that women servers should be left alone and be able to do their job. I think it's nice for college kids to be able to make their money. And then you're talking about the European situation as well. But to me, a tip is two things. A tip is a way to say thank you for what's happened, and it's a way to pay it forward in the for the future. And I think we're sort of helping each other in that regard. If you've gotten good service and you reward somebody well, the person behind you who takes the table behind you is going to be served well. And also, I think that if you walk up to a hot dog stand and there's a jar there with a bunch of dollars in it, and you want to put something in it, put it in because that's what you want to do, not because you want the person to be able to smile at you. You want to make someone to treat you well in a white tablecloth restaurant, go back several times, treat them well, be treated well. It'll work out for you.
Hey, thank you so much for the phone call, John. And Daniel, it's interesting, as we think about etiquette, so often we line it up to obligation. Like, what do I have to do? What's my base level of behavior so as to not come off like a gigantic jerk? But what John's talking about is something kind of different, which is a notion that tipping for good service is really about paying it forward. It's about putting, I don't know, for lack of some better term, putting something else out good into the universe, and someone down the road will benefit from that.
I love that call. I love the spirit of it. There is a certain generosity to it that really comes through. And at its best, that's what the system of tipping for service is all about.
Mm. Let's go to a few quick phone calls because we got a lot of people want to join us, and we've only got a couple minutes here. Peter, go ahead.
Hey, John. Good morning.
Yeah.
I wanted to say I'd be against any sort of service charge that's automatically added to the bill, because I think tipping is really a way to rate the service you get. And I think you kind of have to start around 10%. But I'm not shy. I'll go up to 30% if someone really knocks it out of the park.
Yeah. So it's sort of a 30% limit for you, but you'll go as high as that. Well, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I don't know. Do people expect 20% just baseline, Chris, right now at restaurants?
I think, yeah. I mean, 18 to 20% is the norm. But
I can't do math for 18%.
And I think that's the other question. You know, in the systems that we have, the other question is I can't stand having to do that at the end of the night, right? And when I'm eating out, then you're sitting there going, you're a little embarrassed because everyone's looking at you like, do you want a calculator? You know, I have a tip app on my phone, but do you whip the phone? I mean, yeah. I like having the little cheat sheet that comes on the end of the credit card statement sometimes, like give the 10 or 15, 18 and 20.
Well, and something I never noticed. Notice, Colleen, this is new. You get the cheat sheet at the bottom, and it says if you want to tip 20, it's this much, 18. But they base it on the pre-tax cost. I've never done that. If the number I see at the bottom is $100, I give them $20. Done. End of story. But I didn't realize that they were actually basing the 18 or 20 percentage points on a pre-tax number.
Right, which was another big comment I got in the article. So does wine count? Does, you know, I think the bottom line on the check counts.
Where's our etiquette guy? Because this is the one that gets me. So you have two tables sitting next to each other. One has a $15 bottle of wine. One has a $70 bottle of wine. Their checks otherwise are exactly the same. What more does the wait staff have to do to the $70 bottle that they didn't do to the $15 bottle?
Daniel?
I get this question in my seminars all the time, and I even blow that example up. I take it to a $3,000 bottle of wine.
Okay.
And I say – and the service was no different. They walked to the table. They uncorked it. They poured it. If you can afford the $3,000 bottle of wine, you can afford the tip on the $3,000 bottle of wine. It's the way I approach that with clients. And we say you tip on alcohol. You don't have to tip on tax. Most people do because it's easier. That's the bottom line on that bill. but it's not an expectation. Some communities, municipalities charge really exorbitant service tax on meals, or not service tax, but tax on meals. And some people don't want to pay that. That's where the history of that not having to pay a service, a tip on tax.
Well, there's so much to get to, and unfortunately, we've run completely out of time. If you want to learn more, you can go to their website. It's the Awesome Etiquette Podcast, and also Emily Post's website. Daniel Post Setting is author and spokesperson for Emily Post, and he's co-host with Lizzie Post of the Awesome Etiquette Podcast. Daniel, thanks so much for your expertise. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Chris Prosperi, co-owner and chef at Metro Beast in Simsbury, and also, of course, from the Food Schmooze Wednesdays with Faith Middleton. Thanks so much for bringing us breakfast, Chris. We'll leave. We'll leave you something nice. Colleen Shaddix, a writer who got us started thinking about this. Thanks so much, Colleen. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Of course, you can always continue this conversation online at WNPR.org. Betsy Kaplan produced our program today. The executive producer of our show is Katie Talarski. I'm John Dankosky. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live.